Good morning. Everybody come in and we'll start. Okay. Thank you, bell ringers. Thank you. Good morning. I am Pat Embers. I'm a member of this Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whatever faiths you have known or flags of your heritage, you are welcome here. We have both ministerial and lay-led services. Today, we are happy to be joined by our speakers, Laura Lott and Sarah Hoyt. Whatever path brought you here, I ask you to join us today with an open heart and an open mind and greet you with the same. And in the spirit of community, I would like to ask you to take a moment to say good morning to your neighbors. Okay, are we all introduced? I think they'd like to keep talking the whole time. Okay, and now I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests. If you are a visitor and are relatively new to our fellowship and would like to introduce yourself, please feel free to do so now. Do we have any visitors or people who are new who would just like to say who they are? Is there a, oh.
Hi, my name is Leanna. Hold on.
Sorry, we do have a microphone. It helps.
People have headsets to hear, so.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Amanda. This is my first time here, and this is my son, Colby.
Thank you for coming.
Good job.
I'm Larry Riott from Abilene, and this is my first time here.
All right, welcome.
He's my guest, and I went to the Catholic Church with him last night. And the lesson was on humility, and the priest said that Friday night was a good lesson in humility for us.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid it was. Okay. Thank you for sharing any more. Okay. We invite visitors and guests to sign our guest book in the narthex, and there's a form that you can receive a complimentary subscription to our newsletter. And for more information, I encourage you to mingle with people at coffee and learn more about us or tell us about yourself. I draw your attention to the announcements printed in the bulletin. I don't have any other written announcements at this time, so they are on the right-hand side. And so we will continue with our opening words. And these opening words are from the UUA website by Ben Wanenke. As we gather together this morning, may we learn to recognize and affirm the pieces of possibility, the bits of good we bring. May we encourage rather than control, love rather than possess, enable rather than envy, allowing our individual gifts to weave a patchwork of peace, the soft, deep blue of sensitivity and understanding, the red energy of creativity, the white heat of convictions, the risky, fragile green of new growth, the golden flashes of gratitude, the warm rose of love. Each of us is indispensable if we are to minister to a broken and wounded world. Together in our gathered diversity, we form the whole. So be it. And now for our chalice lighting. May our chalice lighting this morning remind us of what this flame represents at UU. Is in one minute, okay, I'll tell you. Is it a fruit bowl, a salad bowl, or a chalice with blended juices or fine wine that holds us together in our religious community? Is it our humanism, our progressivism, or our mysticism we have in common? Is it a denominational label, a liberal spirit, or a noble history that connects us? Is it our values or our principles and purposes which bind us? Is it our way of being religious, our devotion to social justice, or our love of discussion that unites us? Is it our free will, evolution, or is it God that holds us together as a spiritual community? It is all of these and more that connect us in our congregation and UU Fellowship. Our faith grows stronger as we come together to light our chalice with over 1,000 Unitarian Universalist congregations on this Sunday, September 1st. I thank William for being our chalice lighter this morning. Thank you, Chalice. Thank you very much, William. Okay, we can turn to 173 in our gray hymnal for our opening hymn, In the Branches of the Forest. And everybody can stand as they are able. In the branches of the forest, in the petals of the marigold, on the shoulder of the mountain, in the vastness of the sea, you will find a brooding sadness over all the ancient watershed. You will see it written plainly on the wind and in the sand. There's a blight up on the mountain, there's a sickness in the evenings. When we ask the age-old questions, can we purge us of this sin? Can we save the gurgle nestling from the venom of the cankerworm? Can we clear the look of anguish from the soft eyes of the doe? In the thunder, new commandments sound a warning through the wilderness. Let the forest be untainted, let the streams be ill-defiled, let the waters of the river as they flow down to the ocean be as sweet when the mountain stood alone. Now is the time of, in our order of service, when we share those significant joys and concerns we carry in our hearts and minds. By sharing heavy burdens, they are lightened. By sharing joys, they grow. Do we have any joys and concerns this morning? Wait for the microphone, please.
I have a joy that my mom made blah bars, short for blueberry lemon oatmeal bars, and she brought them today.
Okay. Jim Chanteau, and I'm delighted to have my two daughters with us here this morning. Karen is here from Columbia, Missouri, and Jill is here from Arlington, Virginia. So they're here for the Labor Day weekend.
Right. Any more joys and concerns? There's one way back there.
I've been visiting a friend the last couple of months a few times a week at the VA in Topeka, and it's actually kind of a joy. He died on Thursday, but he was a good friend of mine.
Thank you. Any more joys or concerns? Okay, well, we will move on then to our story for all ages, and now all the children may come up in front and join Destiny for a story.
The book I'm going to be reading today is called Joseph Had a Little Overcoat. Joseph had a little overcoat. It was old and worn. So he made a jacket out of it and went to the fair. Joseph had a little jacket. It was old and worn. So he made a vest out of it. And he danced at his nephew's wedding. Joseph had a little vest. It got old and worn. So he made a scarf out of it and sang in the man's chorus. Joseph had a little scarf. It got old and worn. So he made a necktie out of it and went to visit his married sister in the city. Joseph had a little necktie. It got old and worn. So he made a handkerchief out of it and drank a glass of hot tea with lemon. Joseph had a little handkerchief. It got old and worn. So he made a button out of it and used it to fasten his suspenders. Joseph had a little button. One day he lost it. Now he had nothing. So Joseph made a book about it, which shows you can always make something out of nothing.
But sweet, good story. I would like to do a reading for you from a book called Earth Medicine by Jamie Sams. Jamie is of Native American heritage with ancestry from the Seneca, Cherokee, Choctaw, and Mohawk tribes. And the subtitle of this book is Ancestors' Ways of Harmony for Many Moons. And it tells us kind of why we need to recycle. This is a calendar, actually, and one of the readings is called The Earth Blanket. The tribe of all things green and growing speaks to us in many ways. The plant people and standing people, the trees, are good role models for their human relations. It is through the green and growing tribe that we can learn the lessons of balanced giving and receiving, generosity, interdependence, and standing tall. This tribe of the plant kingdom is called the Earth Blanket. It not only blankets the Earth Mother, but it gives the sheltering homes to all other life forms. The Earth Blanket recycles the air we breathe and the water we drink. Without this blanket, we would not survive. Most of the natural cures for human diseases are found in the forests and rainforests of our planet. It would be a shame to lose all human life to plagues because the cures for those diseases were no longer available, the forests having been destroyed to make throwaway chopsticks. In Brazil, 600 acres a day are destroyed for that usage alone. Our plant relations carry many keys to our survival as a planet. Can we afford to be so ignorant or so wasteful? To cut a living tree without the standing person's permission is to destroy a living being. Ask yourself how you would feel if it were your child being cut down. Then you will know the pain the plant kingdom feels and the horror this strikes into the hearts of those of us who can hear them scream. And I'd like to also read just a little bit of her introduction to this book and the knowledge of the Native Way. In Native American culture, we see everything as being alive. Each living thing has a specific role as a teacher and family member. Everything on earth, whether stone, tree, creature, cloud, sun, moon, or human being, is one of our relatives. In tribal traditions, we do not consider grandfather son a deity. We do not worship trees or rocks. We do, however, see the eternal flame of love that the great mystery placed in all creation, and we honor that spiritual essence. In the Seneca language, we call it Orenda, This is the spiritual essence of creative principle called the eternal flame of love that is found inside of all life forms. And now we will have the offertory, and we will hear from Ann Zimmerman, right? I forgot mine. Doug was able to get his. Who will be heard singing and playing the piano for her song, The Recycling, which is on her Blue Wild Indigo album. Thank you. Okay, we all like Ann Zimmerman. And that was one of her great songs she wrote, played, and sang. Okay, now we will go to our sermon topic, and which is on recycling, as you can probably tell by now. I'd like to welcome our speakers who will be opening up the topic of recycling and its many aspects. Laura Lott will offer aspects for us to be able to carry out conscientious caring for our planet. Laura is a UU member on the UU program committee, mother of three children, owns a dog boarding and daycare business, and works to uphold a green home and business. And Sarah is joining Laura today. She cares about lots of green issues such as reuse, recycling, clean energy, etc., but also focuses on how and why to eliminate certain products and chemicals and shares her reflections on toxicity. Laura, would you like to begin?
All right, is that good? Yeah? Awesome. Okay, just a second, I have to put my password in. All right. Okay. Let's see. I saw the photos on Craigslist of this dwelling. It was so bright, and I felt my emotions swell up looking at the pictures. It seemed like the light was reflecting everywhere, as if a thousand crystals hung swaying in the large windows. I knew immediately that we belonged there. Its earthiness wrapped my senses before I even visited the place. Once I pulled up to the drive, I saw the beautiful butterfly stained glass window, and upon expanding my view, I noticed the large rolling hillside to the left with its beautiful boulders. I knew William would be exploring there. I could see it. I saw him dragging large sticks up to make forts and friends with the life there. I saw destiny growing strong and kind in the peaceful space, loving, laughing, crying, living. I knew there would be more children, too. I saw the layout for the business with large sleeping rooms for dogs and many yards for play. Norton was trying to tell me something different here. as well as an ability to open the house for our boarding duck furry friends. What I didn't know was how the details would work themselves out, or why I was so drawn to something I didn't know how to get. Nonetheless, I knew I was looking at our future, and for the first time I saw it as big and open. The details worked out. The three of us began working every day and night, building our dreams, cementing our family, and working together in the freezing cold, exciting months of our new life. We have always been conscious of our planet, but this home created something with us. We kept everything as it was when it was first built. We worked around the beauty of the home and used supplies that we could that already had a life somewhere else prior. It was perhaps more difficult, but it was the way I could afford to do it, as well as the best way to show my children how to put more effort into something that you feel passionate about. We were able to get our paint, a lot of our paint base from the hazardous waste department. Now, you could argue that paint is in no way green, and you are right. But I decided that using paint already created, destined to be on this earth, was the way to go when we could. We found most of the things we needed from the ReStore, Grand Old Trunk, and Nate's house. And the things that I had to buy to purchase new I didn't worry about. We were able to start composting for the first time since I was a child. We had the space for more beautiful gardens, growing cabbages, spinach, roots, lots of squash. We feel abundant here because we are here. We have the right conditions for more herbs, And now when bugs bite, we can pull off tansy. When we drink tea, we use our own dried flowers and leaves, much like us, grown with nothing but love, water, and dirt. When we eat our garden's bounty, it is a delightful experience, using what the earth offers us and then giving it back in such a perfect circle. Our home is 119 years old. It is incredibly situated under a soft canopy of giant hackberry trees that allows us to keep our windows open most of the year. As a gift, we get to hear the goldfinches laughing as they do and experience the big baby cardinals walking with their daddies. I feel so connected to our world here, to who we really are. It deepens my love for Mother Earth and entices me to care for her as she does for us. I have dreams like building a coop and adding chickens to our family, utilizing their most perfect food. Fencing in the hill for happy little goats, drinking their milk and potentially eating their meat, if Nate will kill them. And building a rain barrel once we get gutters. Also learning how to use our gray water. Most of our water would be good for many things a second or third time. We only use vinegar and baking soda for cleaning. Come to think of it, we use baking soda for washing our clothes, ourselves, our hair, and vinegar as a rinse or a bath soak. The other items that we use are oils, essential, grapeseed, and olive. Did you know that oil can get an oil base stained out of cloth? Shortly after we moved in, the kids wanted to work even more at creating a life that heals and protects our Mother Earth and respects all that she does for us. We came up with a plan. We would begin to incorporate one new thing each day for 365 days that was helpful to the planet, kind, healing, and or healthy. It was a breath of fresh air, and imagine where that would put us in a year. Imagine where that would put all of us in one year. This wasn't very overwhelming because all of us can change one small thing at a time, so we began. The first thing on the list was to rid ourselves of paper products, except toilet paper, which we still use. I made 40 cloths out of scraps, and we use them for everything you can imagine. Next, tea bags made from muslin. We began the process of getting better at not purchasing anything that comes in plastic and modified that to not buy anything that wasn't recyclable plastic. Are we perfect? No, not at all. I get a Starbucks coffee every third Wednesday, and the lid is completely toxic. But I can put the cup in a bin in the truck, and I can rinse it out when I get home and make sure that it becomes something else in its next life. I sometimes partake in the lovely women's coffee group, and I rarely remember to bring my own cup. Instead of beating myself up, I just feel good that I can make the changes eventually. Sometimes it's easier to buy my eggs at Dillon's than get cash and go to the farm. And occasionally we get the store-bought antibiotic full powdered additive milk that contributes to greenhouse gases, and it's delicious. Do we feel guilty? No. I strongly recommend raw milk from a cow whose name you know, and I urge you to get goat and chicken meat the same way. I like to know what kind of life the animals are living and that they are raised in a manner that is healthy for them and the planet. Do you know how much damage to our earthly habitat the meat industry creates in a variety of crazy ways? One especially cool and easy thing to do is create a root cellar. Squashes, roots, and some fruits can survive all winter, and you can reduce your consumption of commercially produced products, organic or not. If you buy it in a store, it was shipped there and packaged. Again, don't feel guilty. I mean, who doesn't love avocados? But how awesome is it to walk down and get a fresh spaghetti squash you grew and eat it in December, knowing there isn't much negative impact on the world involved in nourishing your family? Use tomatoes from your garden for the sauce and butter you made from cream skimmed off of Daisy's milk. The squash skins can go right back into the earth, nurturing the land borrowed to grow them in the first place. Now that is what I call a perfect meal. There is something incredible about learning what each plant needs to grow strong, vibrant, and bear fruit for us. Talk about awe-inspiring technology. Our Mother Earth is just magical. Everything she needs, she is. and she gives to us so freely all of it. Our job, the way I see it, is to only ask of her what we actually need and to refuse to take advantage of her loveliness. My opinion? We are all just a bit out of whack as a people, in a multitude of ways, one of which is how we treat each other and the planet. We need to lovingly tweak some of our practices and heal our home. I don't think it's as overwhelming as we assume. If there is one thing I want my children to understand, it is that we are all completely interconnected. There isn't a thing I can do that doesn't affect the universe, good or bad. In order to find peace and love ourselves, we have to accept the connection and extend the love to every single living thing in the here and beyond. We are all one. There is no separation. If we dump oil in our oceans, we are choking ourselves. If we smash the spider that lives in the window, we are throwing off the system just as much. He is as important as I. And little did we know he was going to eat those carpenter ants. Mother Earth has a perfect system. And if we just leave it be, it works. Now, let's be clear. This has been a life in progress. It is a life in progress. I don't do everything I could. I'm sure of it. I know it. I drive and love my giant truck that eats lots and lots of gas. But I can combine all my errands into one trip. If we all give it our all, then we can't live in fear of what we aren't doing. I am fortunate to have a large knowledge of herbs and medicinal and otherwise and oils from my mother and grandmother. We grew up turning to the earth for our needs, but I have lived a variety of lives that have left a gaping hole in the patchwork of this planet. Meth doesn't exactly leave a light carbon footprint. My Clayton worked on the rigs digging, pulling, forcing oil out of our earth. Bobby worked paving the planet with big smoking monsters. But I don't feel guilty about these choices. I feel fortunate to have grown my love bigger, my caring stronger, and to have the chance to do more now. I consider it an expression of love and respect to tread lightly and replenish what I take. It breaks my heart when we knock down buildings or uproot trees. I can't really get a handle on mowing, and I don't understand why we use the word weed as if it's negative. I can't comprehend why we would use something in a can that's labeled says harmful to pets, fatal to wildlife and aquatic life. I don't get why we spray poisons out of tanks on the sides of roads that render the precious land harmful and useless. But then again, I can't wrap my mind around killing each other in arguments cross pretend nations or power struggles. Who wants power? Force? Flowing, letting go, those things feel better if you ask me. Love. Love feels better if you ask me. I am not naive. I am not undereducated. I am not unrealistic. And I call bullshit. I say we are a species using excuses to follow the greedier path in the name of progress. And we are all willing to believe the lie, turn on our air conditionings, close off to each other, and weep for the missing link. Well, bullshit. Do. Change the things you don't like. Who cares how big, how small, how pink, how yellow, how fluffy? Not a single one of those meaningless things matters one little bit. And if we find ourselves saying it does, we should at least be aware that we are lying. To ourselves, to our children, and if we feel divided or little, we should know it's all in our minds. It doesn't exist outside of ourselves, but everything else does. We are strong. We are everything. We are nothing. We are as important as every spider, as every plant. And if we hate anything, then we put hate out there to spread and suffocate as it does. Let your love grow. Let it loose. Let it free. Let it dance and spin and take over and spill out and fill everything you do, everything you touch. Let go. That's it.
When Laura asked me to do this, she didn't tell me what she was going to say, and now I've got to follow that. Okay. So, different but related. I was on the phone with my mother a few months ago when she said, "There aren't any birds here this summer. I think it's another silent spring." "What do you mean?" I asked. "There are no robins, no blue jays, very few house finches," she said. "Mainly I only see sparrows. When I take my walks, I used to see meadowlarks, but I've only seen a few all summer." My mother lives in rural Nebraska on the border of Colorado. She loves her flower gardens, her trees, and the birds. Several kinds of feeders hang so she can watch the birds congregate from the kitchen table and from the window above the kitchen sink. I told her that I was having dinner with a friend who is an ornithologist, and I would ask him what he thought. "Drought," he said. "That's the best explanation I can think of. They've had such prolonged drought out west that the birds haven't sustained the population. They're missing an entire generation, and it will take years to recover." I offered this to my mother, but she was not consoled. "It's not just the birds," she said. "I haven't seen butterflies this year. We have hardly any bugs either." I didn't know what to tell her. I'm not a scientist, but I do mark this as a turning point in an unspoken argument, well, sometimes spoken, that we've been having for years, one in which I unpack the groceries and she scans anything with an organic label skeptically. An argument where I turn off the hose on her lawn once water starts pooling on the adjacent pavement, while she casually mentions that mine is looking awfully weedy. And it's true, my lawn is weedy. I either pull the weeds out of my flower beds or I let them grow. I'm gradually replacing the lawn with native plants. Mom thinks that organic products are a scam and that no gardener's arsenal is complete without a big barrel of Roundup in the garage. Granted, it would probably be more unusual in the ways of mothers and daughters if we agreed on everything, but it's not just about political leanings or frugality. I think these things may have affected my health, and so I often think about toxicity. This is not to say that I lead an exemplary toxic-free green life. I want to be Laura when I grow up. There are so many of you here today who are more qualified and experienced in issues of green living, but I try to make changes where I can. It was the middle of summer in 2005, and I don't recall the exact date, although I do recall the exact location. I was sitting in a rental car at the intersection of 48th Street and Ward Parkway in Kansas City, Missouri, on my way to a board meeting for the nonprofit where I worked as a communications director. As I gripped the steering wheel, I felt a sharp burning pain in the fingers on my left hand, and I stared at them. I'd been staring at those fingers a lot lately since I'd just gotten married, but this time the pain held my attention. It didn't recede, and this is when I knew that the weight loss, nausea, and severe fatigue were really part of something larger going on with my health. Shortly after, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. Maybe some of you have friends or family who have been diagnosed with the condition. It largely affects women. There are no known causes, and there are no definitive cures. There are two main modes of treatment: living well, plenty of sleep, good diet, avoiding alcohol, etc., and palliative care, including medications. There is a huge variety of symptoms. One person may be able to function without medication, another functions with them, and still others are entirely unable to work or engage in normal life activities no matter what they try. It's not degenerative, and it isn't the worst thing that I could have imagined happening to my health by a long shot. I can still work as long as I take medication and get lots of sleep. I do notice a marked increase in symptoms during stressful experience, things like stuttering and double vision. So that impacted my move away from my career in nonprofit administration and fundraising, which could be terribly stressful. There's very little research about the experiences of pregnant women with fibromyalgia. I don't have children. The medical professionals I've talked with generally say, go ahead and try it. which is awfully reassuring. But because of my health, we've decided to adopt possibly an older child, like Laura has. In my day-to-day life, it's a struggle to modulate expectations for myself. Like many of you Midwesterners, I grew up in a family that placed a huge value on one's ability to work hard. You have a full-time job, a well-managed household, a big garden, several volunteer gigs, and we will say with admiration, she's a real worker. I used to be a worker, but now pushing my physical limits directly translates to making myself sick. If you haven't heard of fibromyalgia, perhaps you've heard of chronic fatigue syndrome or Gulf War syndrome. They share a number of characteristics in common, and the three are frequently discussed together in medical literature. So even though it's possible that they have entirely different causes and different potential treatments and cures, I regularly read news about all three. For example, according to a recent report by the National Academy of Sciences on veterans with Gulf War syndrome, this multi-symptom illness is most likely results from the interaction between environmental exposures and genes. Genetic may predispose some individuals to illness. Now, nearly 700,000 U.S. personnel were deployed to the region during the Gulf War, and more than 250,000 of them suffer from persistent unexplained symptoms. Further, a 2013 study published in Neuroepidemiology describes how coalition bombings early in the Gulf War targeted the Iraqi chemical weapons infrastructure and had serious consequences for the lives of the soldiers, not to mention the civilians living there we don't know about, though the military denied any connection for years. In short, on January 19, 1991, nerve agent alarms sounded within coalition positions hundreds of miles to the south, and the trace presence of sarin vapor was identified by multiple technologies. Officials concluded that the absence of casualties around the bomb sites meant that debris could not have reached the U.S. troop positions, and consequently the alarms were considered false positives, and low-level nerve agent exposure was disregarded as a possible cause of Gulf War syndrome. However, new evidence analyzing known meteoric conditions from the state and their probable effect on the plumes of gas from nighttime bombings mean that the alarms were accurately detecting nerve agent in the atmosphere. Accordingly, the study advises that chronic post-war illness should be reassessed using veterans' reports of hearing nerve agent alarms as the major measure of exposure. Recent reports suggest that soldiers from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan may face similar health issues from environmental exposures such as the burn pits used to dispose of trash. Waste ranging from plastics to human feces is burned in the pits using jet fuel as an accelerant in what amounts to war on the environment. I'm not a veteran, and I have never been around a bombed-out burning chemical facility. Even though the fibromyalgia and Gulf War syndrome are often compared, I'm painting with really broad strokes here to make a point. No one knows what causes fibromyalgia exactly, though. Like the report on Gulf War syndrome, it's believed that some people have a genetic predisposition to the condition. I myself have a first cousin with fibromyalgia, and we share more in common than our genetics. We were both raised in western Nebraska. Our fathers are both farmers who use every herbicide, pesticide, and fertilizer. Sorry. At their disposal. How much of that have we consumed and swam in? When I was little, I would play on the bags of orange seed corn stacked in the Quonset. And when I say orange, I don't mean golden. I mean orange kernels the color of tang because they've been, pre-treated with fertilizers. And I'm not saying that I know there's a connection.
But when you're in pain or can't function from exhaustion, you can drive yourself a little crazy thinking about what might have caused the pain and exhaustion. I've had almost 10 years to think about it and read about it, and that's been enough to spur me to make a few changes. Even if I don't see a material impact from the changes I make, I've concluded that there's something to the proverb that it's an ill bird who fouls its own nest. What are we exposing ourselves to in everyday life? What will be identified as the next DDT, the next BPA? This April, the late Senator Frank Lautenberg and Senator Kristen Gillibrand introduced the Safe Chemicals Act of 2013, which had 22 Democratic co-sponsors. The Safe Chemicals Act would have modernized and reformed the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act. This 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act, also known as TSCA, is overseen by the Environmental Protection Agency. According to their website, TSCA endows the EPA with the authority to require reporting, record-keeping, and testing requirements, and restrictions relating to chemical substances and/or mixtures. Certain substances are generally excluded from TSCA, including, among others, food, drugs, cosmetics, and pesticides. When it was passed, more than 60,000 drugs were grandfathered in without being tested. The law puts the burden of proof on the EPA rather than the manufacturers, and a la Catch-22, manufacturers do not have to supply their testing data to the EPA. Since implemented more than 35 years ago, the EPA has succeeded in restricting manufacture of only five chemicals: PCBs, chlorofluorocarbons, dioxins, asbestos, and hexavalent chromium. This is all old news for some of you, but for those of us born in the mid-70s and later, I think a lot of us function without reflecting whether materials we use in our daily lives are safe or not. If the burden of proof is on the chronically underfunded EPA rather than on the corporations who manufacture them, then I think the system is broken. Unfortunately, since the Democratic-based proposal had little chance of moving forward, in May, Senator Lautenberg joined with David Vitter, a Republican of Louisiana, to introduce the Chemical Safety Improvement Act of 2013, also meant to overhaul the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act. However, this version gives manufacturers much more latitude in how and when they provide proof that their chemicals are safe. Although 20 of the original Democratic sponsors of the previous proposal declined to support this weaker plan, the Chemical Safety Improvement Act does have bipartisan support from 22 members of Congress. A multitude of advocacy groups say that while this bipartisan act is far from ideal, it's better than nothing and more likely to move forward. I have no idea what to think, but I will share that a few of the Republican sponsors include Senators Marco Rubio of Florida, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, and Lisa Murkowski of Arkansas. Not exactly an inspiring lineup. Of course, when reflecting on toxicity, we can look beyond the creation of products in our environment to see that globally we are polluting with increasingly dire consequences. In China, the situation is reaching epic proportion. China's Ministry of Environmental Protection released data in July of this year, revealing that air quality in Beijing during the first 6 months of 2013 did not meet safety standards well over half the time. The national average was only marginally better. It met the safety standards almost half the time. And of course, it's not just the quality of the air that suffers, but naturally the safety of the water and food too. In the summer of 2006, my husband Dan spent a month in Ecuador related to his job as an English professor. While the group he was with made a visit to a banana plantation, their guide said, "Listen for the birds." There wasn't any bird song. When I mentioned this to my mother, she said, "We've been farming this way for 50 years. Why would it change anything now?" Still, she is missing her birds. After discussing this topic at length with a friend who is a scientist, she saw the following quote in a natural history museum this summer and sent it to me. I don't know that I agree with it, but it's helped frame my response to the issue of toxicity in a manageable way. Forget about the condor, the snow leopard, and the panda. Find some little musquash, squib, or buzzing thingamajig that nobody else thinks about. You care about it. Adopt it. See that it gets what it needs, its space, its food, clean air, and pure water. Succeed in that, and the condor, snow leopard, and panda will be okay too. All forms of life need the same things. Making the earth a less toxic, less congested, and more natural place will benefit all living creatures, including ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you to both Laura and Sarah for a wonderfully passionate speech on recycling and all the aspects to think about. But we have plenty of time for us to ask questions or to share our experiences about recycling in our lives. And I think I'm going to ask Laura and Sarah if you'd like to come up here, and then they can direct their questions to you.
Sorry, I went a little afield from the original theme of recycling.
Sorry, this is not about recycling either. It's about the bird theme because, as some of you may know, I'm a bird watcher, have been all my life, and more a bird listener than anything because I know most, or if not all, of the birds that I hear by sound. And I grew up in Middle Tennessee, where there's a fairly spectacular warbler migration in the spring that happens every year. And outside my window, I could identify all the warblers by the time I was probably 10 or 12 years old. And I had the pleasure of being back in the same room that I grew up in this spring, and not that I haven't noticed this before, but it was really striking. The birds are not there. And these are the migratory birds that are spending their winters in the south, usually South America or Central America or the Bahamas or somewhere like this. And I know that I haven't kept hard numbers, but and I know my hearing is certainly failing a little bit, but I'm sure that something's going on. So despite the fact that I'm not really as paying as much attention to the yard birds, the finches, the robins, and this, that, and another, I think that there really is probably something to what your mother is experiencing.
My dad denies it wholeheartedly, of course. And I can hear him in the background when my mom and I are talking on the phone saying, I just saw a nuthatch down by the bank. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. What nuthatch? No problems here at all.
I'm a little new to the Midwest, so I don't know much about the flora and fauna of the Midwest, but I did grow up in Florida, and I do remember being very young at my grandparents' house, and in the mornings I would be lying in bed and I'd be listening to the sounds of doves all over the place, and I would get up and I would spend hours upon hours catching these tiny little lizards. They were everywhere. You couldn't go 3 feet without seeing a lizard. But then as I got older and I had a child of my own, I realized, being over at my grandparents' house, which would become my mom's house, there weren't any lizards because I wanted to show my daughter how to catch lizards. And recalling stories about the birds and listening to the birds in the morning, and they weren't there. And I would drive by the fields of orange trees, and there were less and less orange trees because there were less and less bees. And we also had this one town called Plant City. It was renowned for its strawberries. But the oranges got smaller and the strawberries got smaller. And I've been hearing that there's so much of a problem with the bees in Florida that it's not pollinating these plants and we're losing a lot. And I've been hearing so much information on the news about the if we lose the bees, we're in big trouble, and we're losing them. There, I don't know how it is around here, but I know down in the South and then in California, the bees are disappearing, and the flowers are disappearing, and the plants are disappearing, and the creatures that live on them are disappearing. And the bees, from what I've heard, are yellow canaries. The yellow canaries that used to be in the mines, that used to detect all the chemicals and the poisons. Well, the bees are yellow canaries. We're living in this mine, and they're dying, but we're not getting out of the mine. We're not doing something about it.
I can recall all the many years ago when I was young, being able to hear the frogs. I mean, in the summertime, this time of year, go out at night, the frogs would be deafening. Where are the frogs? The amphibian decline is not just here in the Midwest, it's all over the world. And it's another one of these things, like the honeybees, that to my, what you know, people will deny things like the effects of global change, because it's so slow. But I've seen the decline of the frogs and the amphibians in my now roughly 70 years of life. And it's really something that's, I was just looking it up here as I was thinking about making this comment. Nobody knows what's exactly causing it, mm-hmm. but it's definitely happening.
There's, do you mind if I respond to that? There's a book called Wild Ones by John Mualim that came out recently, and it tracks the decline of three different species. One is the polar bear, one is a tiny little butterfly on a certain patch of earth in California, and the third is the whooping cranes. And in this book, he talks about I can't think of the exact term, but it's something to the effect of our adjusted benchmark. And that is, for each generation, they adapt to what their normal is, right? So for this generation, the normal is no amphibians. So then you don't worry about it. And for the next generation, what will the new normal? And it just, you know, it increases that way. We reset or recalibrate in our consciousness, our collective consciousness, the way it should be until it can spiral kind of out of control.
Great presentation, both of you. Really wonderful. Can you hear me? Okay, there we are. You're making me think of an incredible new work of art that any of you can visit online. It's by Maya Lin, the same one who designed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. It's her latest memorial, and it's called What's Missing? And it's this amazing global map, and you can click on a dot of light and see the extinct species all over the world or the endangered species. It's a beautiful thing. So if you get a moment, go to What's Missing? Maya Lin. And also, you put me in frame of mind of thinking, when you spoke about individual species, I think every conscientious person at some point makes that connection between what's really important to them, whether it's a bird, a frog, what was that, a musquash? I don't even know what that is. I love it. And whether that's more important than a new pair of running shoes, right? And for me, that moment came about a year ago when I read that our monarch population worldwide is at 15% what it was in 1997. I remember 1997. I just graduated from college. I loved the beautiful monarchs that come through Wichita every year, which is otherwise such an ugly place to be. And to hear that we have 15% worldwide what we had then, that was just stunning to me. So as a landscape architect, I committed then I will include no fewer than 16 milkweed species in six milkweed species in any planting plan that I'll do.
Excuse
And even though I'm rambling, I want to say one more thing, because you guys made a point that I think is so interesting. You connected rest and our need for rest as humans and the fact that maybe that could aid our whole world. And I agree with you. I think we have to get rid of these last Puritan vestiges of working more, doing more, consuming more, as though that's a good thing, and encourage our colleagues, friends, students to take a nap.
No? I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yes. Did you guys know that butterflies are only second to bees in their pollination? Like, they are very, 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 very crucial to our world. Yeah, so that's crazy.
My issue is much more mundane than all that you have raised, but the facts are these. We do not have enough books for everybody of this hymnal, so we're looking for ways. We have about, for our typical Sunday morning, we have about enough for half of the, but if we just put around half, then you can see people bunch up in places, and so we're looking at other alternatives. For the rest of the discussion period, I will be walking around carrying books for people who don't have one close by or somebody with whom to share, so that you'll be able to sing our closing hymn.
Thank you for a wonderful, heartfelt, and really informative, incredible presentation, both of you. And in keeping with the interconnected web of life, everything everybody says just brings a million thoughts to my mind. And below, like the frogs, there was an unkempt ditch that was by the frontage road that is where in front of, what's that craft store? Hobby Lobby. Do you know that ditch?
Yeah.
And we used to ride our bikes down there really late at night to hear the frogs. And then they nicened it up. It's all cement now. So, I mean, we've destroyed the habitat, which was used to be a den of frogs. Mm-hmm. And then in my neighborhood, there was a kind of a crisis in the past 2 years. I live real close to Eugene Field School, which is now Head Start. It has an enormous limestone chimney. And we used to love to see the chimney swifts swirling around at dusk, and then they fall into the chimney, and then the bats came out. But then one day I was walking past there with my dog, and I noticed some men in a cherry picker messing around on top of the chimney, and I asked them what they were doing, and they said one bird had flown into the school through the basement. So they decided to cap off the whole chimney. So they capped off the whole chimney. So the past couple years, all the bats, well, the birds are gone. I don't know where they went. Oh, actually, I think they're under the viaduct, and some of them might be in our entryway of our church. They make their nests. They're under the viaduct. If anybody goes down there, oh, my gosh, there's so many nests. But then the bats have started to come into everybody's house, and then into the, including my house, and then into the high school. You might have read in the paper that they had to close the gym because they were living in a wall between the two gyms this summer. And interestingly, the school was sensitive enough not to block off their entrances until they thought they had raised their young. And then the other day, my daughter, I don't even know how she saw this, she was driving down the road and she said she saw a car almost hit a bat. So she stopped and got out and pulled one of the probably hundreds of litter out of her car and picked up the bat in a paper cup, which could have been very dangerous because sometimes they're rabid. And I was in my garden, my city garden, and she just showed up and showed me this bat. And she put it down on the ground, and it looked like it was sucking the straw where I'd watered my garden. So we thought maybe it was thirsty, and she found a bottle cap and filled it with water. And we'd never really seen a bat in operation that close. Well, once I... Well, never mind. It's another story. But they can't walk on their hands and feet. Their limbs and their tail are all webbed up, and they crawl on their elbows and knees, and its little knees were skinned from crawling on the road. And then it drank two cupfuls of water, and it moves its little head. It looked like a little kitty cat with little pointed ears and just turned its head around. And then it just lay there, and I discovered later that Chloe had ripped two enormous leaves off my okra plant and covered it up, and she had to go back to Lawrence where she lives now. But I told her before I went to work the next day I would ride my bike down there and see what happened, and so I went down there, and the leaves were undisturbed, but the bat was gone. Mm. So I don't know, I learned a lot about a funny little creature. And I also wanted to add about bees. I read a lot, everything I can about bees, because I really love insects and was part of my professional life. But wild bees are even better pollinators than our domestic bees. And they need wild space, open ground, uncultivated places, and they need consistent blooming of flowers. When agricultural crops offer just periodic things to pollinate, but bees, to be sustained, wild bees need something like open prairies or flowers so that they have a source of food all the time. So my dad actually taught me to always plant my yard that way for all the animals, to have things that are something that blooms all the time and bears fruit. And we've tried, I've been doing the grounds for maybe 10 years here with everyone who helps. We've tried to transfer from doing annuals, and we no longer water the yard. And some people might think it looks a little messy sometimes, but we leave the seed heads for things to eat in the winter. And just little things like that can make a big difference. And I noticed my city garden a few years ago, when there were really no honeybees to be seen, and it still is pollinated by wasps, which everybody hates wasps. They're really important. And all the myriad of wild bees. Thank you.
I wanted to thank you both, first of all, for filling my head and my heart today. And I've been feeling kind of badly. I couldn't think of a question for you all, as there were no questions before, really. And I think it's a good sign we're all thinking about all of this all the time, that we didn't have questions but want to share our stories. The two short things I wanted to say, my job involves me sitting in high school classrooms, and one of them last year was marine biology. And the teacher pointed out to the class, and I had never thought of this before, that cheetahs now, after coming back from being endangered, are all basically first cousins. So even if we bring these species back, unfortunately, it's in a whole other realm. And then the other thing I wanted to share, particularly back to Jim with his frog comment, and Sylvia also, I unfortunately picked today to carry in my own coffee in a styrofoam cup from Darrow's on 17th Street. It's a bad day to do that. But anyhow, about 3 years ago, there was a guy working there that put up some really kind of poignant things on their sign. Now it's always just Coca-Cola 99 cents or whatever. But he used to put up some interesting things, and one of the things he put up once was, "Frogs take it through the skin."
I was very inspired by everything you've both said. Laura, I am specifically interested in your approach to handling and creating ways to recycle in your life, and the fact that you chose something to do every day. And you outlined really a beautiful pattern of some way to help ourselves get into this feeling of recycling every day. Is there anything more you would like to say about that? Or just anything, like, to give us a little impetus on, and that's a lot, right, what you already have said, but is there anything that maybe got you going that could help us get going on something more than what we're already doing?
I know you're excited. Oh, man, yeah, thank you. Goodness, I'm not good on the spot. I like to write things down and read them out loud. I think really for me, I guess it's always been a reoccurring theme, but when it became super powerful is just, you know, when I had my children, because this earth is not ours, and it certainly isn't going to be for anybody if we don't make changes to it. And I want my children to have children and grandchildren, and I want them to hear the finches, and I want them to have everything we have here. So I think that's, for me, what has just been so powerful.
Sorry, that's all I've got.
that's huge, and that goes along with for the next seven generations philosophy of many, not just Native Americans, but many people. Are there any other questions?
Well, once again, this is Anna Franklin. This is not really a question, but there are a couple things that have been running through my mind. You know, this has been going on for such a long time. Back in 1970, a friend of mine who became my friend later wrote a book about things to use plastic milk bottles for. It was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, so he had all kinds of things, including armor and hats and various funny things like that. But the idea was out there that, you know, we're throwing all this stuff into our environment. And then back in 1982, when my daughter was born, 4 months after she was born, we discovered that she had this horrible eczema all over her skin. And it was very heartbreaking to see a tiny infant just covered in this. I visited 5 different dermatologists. All of them said, well, all we can do is give you this cortisone cream. And after several months, I realized that the cortisone cream was only a mask, and that her skin wasn't really healing and it wasn't fixing the problem, and I didn't know where the problem had come from. I was desperate, and when she was 5 or 6 months old, I came to Manhattan to be with my parents so that my mother could take care of me, because I was a basket case, trying to keep my child comfortable and watching her go through this at such an early age. While I was there, NPR did a breakthrough 2-day coverage of chlordane poison, which was being used up until then commonly as a termite deterrent in homes. Well, we had used that at the time that I was first pregnant with my daughter, and the company that came and did it had overused it. And when we brought a toxicologist in, he said, yeah, get this child out of this house. But he not only said that, but he said, you can't continue to breastfeed her because it's in high concentrations in your milk. So, yes, it's a very, very bad problem, and it's lots and lots of different substances, and all of us have been affected, whether we know it or not.
Sybil Perkins, years ago, I'm sorry, I don't have a mind for details, so I can't tell you how long ago, but the scientists in England set out to figure out how to increase productivity in their gardens and in their fields and that sort of thing. One thing led to another, and they found that the healthier they could keep the soil, the better the productivity. And one of the ways they did that was to add organic matter into the soil, constantly over and over and over. Well, that then was the birth of organic farming. We took that term, brought it over to the to here, and we call it organic farming. A lot of people think organic farming just means no spray. No, it means healthy soil. And if you keep the soil healthy, and including don't pollute it, and thriving, then your productivity raises, exponentially. And there's so many things in the soil, the fungus and the bacteria and all the microbes, everything that make a healthy soil. And we do not understand everything that happens in there. Most recently, there's been a discovery that the fungus in healthy soil actually is a communication pathway between plants. So if one plant is being attacked by a specific disease or bug, it can communicate through this chemical pathway to the neighboring plants that there's danger in the area. You need to produce more protection for yourself. And as we unhealthy farming and gardening practices, we destroy all the natural things that happen. Well,
we really need to continue. Thank you for all your comments. Would you turn to page 1067 in your teal hymnal, please? Thank you for all your comments and talks. It's wonderful, really. I would like to give them a hand. Right now. You may all stand as you're able to sing this song and give a little introduction. Mother Earth, beloved garden, living treasure underfoot, all our days you ground our being, sage and thistle, grass and root, herbs to heal us, plants to feed us, land to till and tend and plow. With the pendant deep as midnight north, we ask you be here now. Father Air, your inspiration holds together all that lives. As we breathe, our minds see clearly, leading us to love and give. Raging whirlwind, whispered breezes, violent gale and gentle cloud. With the blade as sharp as morning east, we ask you be here now. Brother Fire, great transformer, share the passion of the sun. In our hearts your warmth receives us, pours us forth and heats our homes. Flaming candle blood within us, blazing desert will do grow. With the one directing power south, we ask you be here now. Sister water ever flowing, ocean, river, pond and rain, drink we now and quench our thirsting, cleanse us, lay begin again. Mist and ice, a host of changes, all that courage will allow. With the cup, the holy chalice, west, we ask you be here now. Lover, spirit, intuition, in the center of our souls, in your love we find relation. We are whole. Timeless mystery, quiet conscience, deepest values, voice inside. With the drum and with the cauldron, this we ask you be our guide. And I would like to close with two very brief quotes from Lame Deer, who is the Lakota Sioux medicine man. It's in this book called The Weeping Sky, and it's just on quotations and songs of Native Americans. It says, all creatures are my relatives, even a tiny bug, as we've already heard from several of us here. And this one, all of nature is in me, and a bit of myself is in all of nature. You can go now and join us for coffee in the narthex.